couple of announcements real quick before we get started, and I turn it over to Robbie. Just a reminder that tonight is class 5 of 5 for this module on the spiritual teacher. And then we have a one-week break, and then we will pick up the 5th module, which is death and rebirth, and Steep will be teaching that. And that is for 5 Mondays in August. So it starts August 2nd and runs through August 30th. There are 5 Mondays in August. And then we'll take a break for Labor Day Monday and then start back up again that next Monday of September for Karma. So these next 2 modules are 2 of my favorites. And then also there's lots going on at Kadampa Center, as always, and I did want to remind you that this Thursday is Don Hendrick's last teaching, and he's teaching on uniting compassion and wisdom. And then for the Wednesdays in August, we have a special treat with Venerable Robina Corton joining us, and she's going to be teaching on loosening the grip of ego grasping. So all of these things are so relevant to what we've been learning about with Robbie this session, as well as previous modules as well. So tune in for those with Don Hendrick and Venerable Robina. Registration is required if you want to join via Zoom. Otherwise, you can watch it on YouTube. All right, so Robbie, we had lots joining us while I was doing that little announcement, so I'm going to turn it over to you now.
Let's wait a minute or two and see if a few more people come in. And just remind people that Geshe Galak's teachings continue on Sunday morning on Zoom, but we're also opening the center for people who want to come together and socially distance while watching the teachings on a screen in the center. Geshe Galak is not going to come to the center quite yet, but the center is open at 10:30 on Sunday mornings now. And it's looking very beautiful. A lot of people have been painting and working on the landscape and everything over the past year. So I think everybody will be quite happy to see how lovely it looks. Okay, so I think we've probably got people in. So let's start with our prayers, Linda. And I will read these in English, and you can mute yourself at home and read along. We'll do Refuge and Bodhicitta 3 times, 4 immeasurables, and then the short mandala offering. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends or hatred for enemies. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, 4 continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it, May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamnirya Kayami. So now we'll do our meditation. Okay, begin by establishing your posture. I think if you've been coming to these sessions, you're starting to become familiar with it. I know some people are quite experienced meditators, and they're quite proficient at the posture, I'm sure. But most of us are sitting in a chair. Some may be in a cushion on the floor. Whichever is you, sit with your back a little bit straighter than you normally sit. Not rigid, but a little bit extended. Not leaning back in the chair. Your head may be just a couple degrees in front of the vertical. Eyes are either lightly closed or just slightly open, letting a little bit of light in, but not enough that we recognize shapes, but just a little bit of light to stimulate our retina and keep us from falling asleep. If we find we tend to fall asleep during our meditation, it's said that keeping our eyes slightly open is a remedy for that. Our lips are lightly closed, not clenched. Our tongue is on a hard palate above our upper teeth. The jaw is relaxed. The shoulders are down and back so that the chest is opened up. This opens the energy channels that are in front of our spine, according to the Buddhist teachings. And there are various energy winds that travel up and down these channels. That is said, the consciousness rides on these winds. Our upper arms are slightly away from our torso. Our hands are with right on left, thumbs touching slightly below the level of the navel, representing the union of wisdom and compassion, that is complete enlightenment. If we're sitting in a chair, our feet are flat on the floor. It's fine to put a cushion under our feet if we need to do so. If we're sitting on a cushion, we're towards the front third of the cushion, and our legs are crossed in a position that we find stable and comfortable. So take a moment to scan your body for any discomfort or tension and address that now so it doesn't become a continuing distraction during the meditation session. So we'll begin our meditation by taking three deep breaths from the abdomen, the stomach expanding on the in-breath as our diaphragm is pulled down and our lungs fill completely. And then the stomach contracts towards the spine on the exhalation. So do that just three times slowly. Mm-hmm. And now we allow our breath to return to its normal pattern. And continuing what we began with our prayers, we set our motivation for the meditation to follow. We always provide a definite beginning, a motivation, a definite end, a dedication to our meditation sessions, give them a little bit of structure. And as much as possible, we generate the bodhicitta motivation, the great mind motivation. And that is the wish to become enlightened for the benefit of others. Two aspects, the wish to become enlightened for the benefit of others. And that may not come naturally or easily, but that's okay. Even if we have to force it, apply effort, that's said to be beneficial for the meditation to follow. And having set our motivation, we now begin the actual meditation. The chosen object is the physical sensation of the breath moving in and out through our nostrils. The tactile, slightly cool feeling of movement of air. And we just place our concentration on that. Just direct perception, direct awareness, non-dualistic awareness of moving air. Nothing more, nothing less than that. And every time we notice our awareness has wandered off to another object, as it inevitably will, we set that aside and come back to the breath. Over and over, as often as necessary. So we'll do that for about 7 minutes.
Thank you.
And we can end our meditation by doing a brief dedication. Acknowledge that we've done something positive by sitting quietly like this for a few minutes. And that has made an imprint on our consciousness that will continue in the future. And we think, may that positive imprint not be lost or wasted, but may it ripen in the future in a way that benefits all living beings. And you may relax your concentration. Okay, let me get organized here. So, already class number 5. Did we have any questions come in this past week, Linda?
No, none that I...
Okay. It's interesting, this topic relating to the spiritual teacher, we wind up putting it in different places in the Discovering Buddhism sequence, partly because we're not sure where it actually belongs or where it would be most effective for the people taking these courses. In the traditional Buddhist teachings, what's called the Lamrim, I think a lot of people are familiar with the term, that's the basic outline of the Buddhist teachings, the graduated path to enlightenment. It includes all the important steps on the path to enlightenment. The subject of related, the spiritual teacher is the very first topic that's taught. And it said that the relationship with the spiritual teacher is the root of the entire path. And a lot of people hear that and they kind of freak out and they say, oh, I've got to find a guru right away and I've got to do all this guru yoga and I've got to do all these practices and everything. But we need to understand that the Lamrim teachings were initially designed for the community of monks who had been studying for years, who had identified their teacher, and were reviewing the Lamrim teachings in order to enter into the tantric path. So they were already pretty far along on their spiritual training. And His Holiness the Dalai Lama says that's exactly the wrong place to put it for most Western students, that it really should be somewhere towards the end, that we really need to get familiar with the entire path before we can begin this process of deciding who we're going to study with. And so in this, we kind of wind up putting it here, there, different places to see where it works. But I hope in these classes I've been able to demystify this subject a little bit, because it does cause a lot of confusion for people, because they hear that for people at a certain level on their spiritual path, how important this close relationship with the teacher is. And we're not all there yet. We've talked in the previous classes about the different types of teachers we may encounter. We're teaching different subjects and at different levels. We've talked about the qualities that we should look for as we're examining possible teachers. Just because someone's sitting up in the front of the class at Kadampa Center doesn't mean that they're an appropriate teacher for everyone who comes to Kadampa Center on that day. Okay, you need to look for these qualities, and we talked about those. That's one of those lists. I'm not going to go through that again. And looking for a teacher who may not have all those qualities, but he or she at least has more positive qualities than negative qualities. And this is where we have to be completely honest with ourselves. Pay attention to that little inner voice of wisdom. And we also look at the fruits of the teacher's labors, the apples that are falling from the tree, his or her other students. okay? You know, not that they're going to be perfect or Buddhas in themselves, but do we see the teachings making a positive effect in their lives? So that, but even if we do say that, doesn't mean that's the right teacher for us necessarily. Then we talked a little bit about qualities that we should bring to the relationship with the teacher to get the most benefit from the teachings. And, you know, open-mindedness and interest and so on and so on. And these are quite, this is applies from when we first start studying Buddhism all the way up until we enter the highest tantric practices. We need to use our native wisdom. Don't be stupid. Okay, if something doesn't seem right, pay attention to that voice. Okay, trust your innate wisdom. Okay, you'll realize that you don't know as much as the teacher, but you can discern their qualities as a person, and that's extremely important. So now I wanted to talk a little bit about the more advanced levels of this relationship with the teacher that we may enter into. And this is what's frequently referred to as guru yoga. Two words, guru, G-U-R-U, and yoga, Y-O-G-A. And these two terms have specific meanings. We use them a lot, kind of loosely, but I wanted to go over what exactly these terms refer to. Okay. A guru is a highly qualified teacher. The actual meaning, guru is a Sanskrit word. The actual meaning of the word guru is heavy. And that doesn't mean that they're a big, fat, laughing Buddha sitting on a throne. It means they are heavy with good qualities. They possess many, many good qualities. Not necessarily every good quality. They may have shortcomings, but they have a lot of good qualities. They are heavy with good qualities. And the Tibetan translation of guru is lama. Okay, and these terms are used very loosely. There's no certifying organization that gives you the title of guru or lama. You know, we talk about Lama Zopa Rinpoche, the head of the FPMT, the organization that we're part of, just because he is generally recognized to be a highly qualified teacher. So people refer to him as Lama Zopa. Okay. Different traditions in Buddhism use the word Lama in different ways. In some traditions, it's someone who's done a three-year retreat. Some traditions use it quite widely, and a lot in some traditions, a lot of Western teachers are referred to as Lama. Okay. And a couple other terms that you may hear, just so we get familiar with one. A Lama who is reincarnated or reborn, the Buddhist point of view is that our consciousness continues and assumes multiple lifetimes. But a Lama who is reborn and is recognized as the rebirth of a previous Lama or highly realized teacher in the way that the Dalai Lama is recognized as the rebirth of the previous Dalai Lama. And this is through various, you know, various techniques that have been developed in Tibet over centuries and centuries for recognizing these rebirths. A reincarnated Lama is called a Tulku, okay, T-U-L-K-U. That's a reincarnated Lama, and they are the honorific title they are given when we talk about them is Rinpoche, R-I-N-P-O-C-H-E. That's the title of a Tulku. A Tulku is referred to as Rinpoche. So Lama Zopa Rinpoche was recognized quite early as the reincarnation of someone known as the Lhado Lama, Lhado being a location high in the Himalayas. And he did a great meditation retreat in a cave high up in the hills. And when Lama Zopa was just a little boy born into an ordinary family on the high elevation in the Himalayas. He would always wander off and try and get to that cave. And that wasn't enough to prove that he was the reincarnation, but there were other signs and tests and everything. And he was officially recognized as a tulku. So he's referred to as Lama Zopa Rinpoche, the reincarnated Lama. Now, just because someone's a reincarnated Lama doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be a great teacher in this lifetime. Okay, Lama Zopa happened to be, but a reincarnated Lama could turn out to be a real scoundrel in this time because they've not erased all their negative karma, and they may be working through some negative stuff in this time. So just being recognized as a tulku doesn't mean you're a great teacher, okay? You don't become a Lama again until you show that you can teach in this lifetime. And some of the reincarnations have no interest in teaching in this lifetime. You know, they get married and have kids in the family and live a comparatively ordinary life. They're a reincarnated Lama, but they don't have the karma to be a great teacher in this lifetime. Okay, so those are some words that we use in referring to people. And so we've got the guru or Lama, the great teacher, yoga, guru yoga. What does that mean? And, you know, yoga we think of as a physical activity, but backtrack just a little bit. Another term that's used in Tibetan to refer to the guru or the lama is spiritual friend. And you'll see that in a lot of texts. There's a famous one called Advice from a Spiritual Friend. So whenever you hear that phrase, spiritual friend, that's referring to a guru, to a great teacher, a highly realized teacher. And the actual more accurate translation of this term, and the Tibetan term, is actually constructive. The spiritual friend is someone who helps us become more constructive, more positive. Okay, someone who treats us like a friend, but uplifts us, okay? A relationship that is constructive or positive. So that's what we mean by spiritual friend. It's not so much spiritual in terms of any kind of woo-woo aspect, but spiritual or constructive in the sense of someone who has a positive effect upon us, who uplifts us, who inspires us. So you'll see the term spiritual friend sometimes. Okay. The term yoga actually means, the literal translation is to yoke, Y-O-K-E. Okay. It means to be yoked to the guru or the Lama. Guru yoga is the process of being yoked, and particularly yoked yoga means yoked to something authentic, something powerful, the real thing, so that we're trying to yoke our body, speech, and mind, our actions of our body, speech, and mind to the actions of the body, speech, and mind of the guru, okay? We're trying to become more like the guru, okay? We're trying to yoke our body, speech, and mind to someone who we have examined very closely and we see as someone who would have a positive influence on us. Okay, so this is why this relationship, when it enters into this level, you have to be extremely careful as you enter into it, because you're saying, I want my body and speech and mind to become more like the body, speech, and mind, or actions of body. You know, we don't want to actually have a body like the teachers. You know, it doesn't mean we have to change sex or the color of our skin or anything like that. But we want our actions of body, speech, and mind to be like the actions of body, speech, and mind of the guru. Okay, so there's that yoking. So guru yoga is becoming yoked to a powerful teacher, a realized teacher, a highly evolved teacher. And it's said that then you'll hear people talk frequently about the, say you get the blessings of the teacher. Okay, the positive, and the word blessing is a little loaded there. And a lot of Westerners say a better word for that is inspiration. Okay, the teacher cannot do it for you. Okay. The teacher cannot remove your negative karma. The teacher cannot make you happy. The teacher has no ability to do that. This is work you have to do on your own. The teacher is, you could say, the role model, or the teacher is the inspiration to do the spiritual work if you're following this path. Okay? So it's... You hear people talk about receive the blessings of the teacher, and that really means to be inspired, creating that sense of being inspired to be more like the teacher in your own mind. And that motivates you in your, as you study on your spiritual path. So what we need to be very clear that what we're talking about here is, it's not like we're becoming a clone of the teacher or a mini-me of the teacher or anything like that. We don't lose our personality. You know, if the teacher likes to drink Diet Coke, we don't have to start drinking Diet Coke. You know, if they clear their throat constantly while they're teaching, we don't have to do that. We're not imitating, okay? We're not becoming a clone. We're not giving up our personality and who we are and losing ourselves in the teacher. We're being inspired by the teacher on our spiritual path. Okay, and that's really what guru yoga is about. And what inspires us in the teacher is their positive qualities. We've looked at them. We've seen more positive qualities than negative qualities. We may see some shortcomings, which is perfectly acceptable. We don't see that. Again, this you'll hear different interpretations of this, but I'm going to say for my point of view, we don't see the teacher. It's not mandatory that we see the teacher as a Buddha, as a completely enlightened Buddha, okay, because we may see shortcomings there. But we do see the teacher's Buddha nature, their potential for Buddhahood. And we see how they are more advanced on the spiritual path than we are. This is particularly true when we are studying what's referred to as the sutra teachings of the yoga. Those are the open teachings, the easily accessible teachings. That's the Lam Rim. That's what all the teachers, just about all the teachers who come to Kadampa Center are teaching. They are teaching the sutra teachings of the Buddha. Now, as we advance on our spiritual path, we'll start receiving tantric teachings from our teacher. Were traditionally the hidden teachings. So now, His Holiness the Dalai Lama gives tantric teachings and initiations to 100,000 people in a field, and they're all over the internet and everything. But the tantric teachings are based on meditations that help us remove the obscurations in our mind that prevent us from understanding the sutra teachings. you talk to anyone who's done a long tantric retreat, whether it's a couple months to a couple years, and they'll say, what did you get out of your tantric retreat? This is where you go up by yourself and you do a meditation that your teacher has instructed you in. And almost without fail, they'll say, I understood the Lam Rim better. That's what I got out of it. A better understanding of the very open and accessible teachings. So in the there's a module in Tantra at the end, so I don't want to get too much into this. In the tantric meditations, we typically use one of the images like chin raising, compassion, or green Tara, or white Tara, or Kala Chakra is a meditation practice that holiness gives a lot. And they're depicted in the tankas on the walls at Kadampa Center. And in those meditations, you essentially practice on your mind, the mind of the teacher, and the mind of the meditational deity. They're referred to deities, or meditational archetypes, being one, being identical. So that's a whole nother level, and we're not really going to talk about that, but that's what you'll talk about in the module on Tantra. You meditate on your mind, the mind of your teacher, and the mind of the meditational archetype being identical, being one. And then you work with that. But that's about all I'm going to say about that. But again, this is based on seeing the positive qualities of the teacher. And that's based on our analysis. As I said last week, some texts say we should take up to 12 years to watch someone as a possible teacher before we accept them as a teacher. Now, that's not realistic for most of us, but it gives us an idea of the degree of analysis that is appropriate before entering into this type of relationship. Let's see. Dun, 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 dun. And we talked about the related. This is important to in the West to remember. A spiritual teacher is not a therapist. Particularly if you're studying with a traditional Tibetan teacher, you may be upset that they don't seem really interested in you and your problems. On what's going on in your life. You don't do the talking, okay? They're the ones who will be giving the teachings. And it is up to you to take them and process them and put them into work. But they're not going to tell you how to run your life, okay? They are there to give you the tools to help you with it, okay? But the hard work all has to be done from your own side. Now, teachers in the West are a little bit more, aren't quite that rigid, okay? But again, I think that's something good to remember. A spiritual teacher is not a therapist. That's not what they're doing. A therapist is a very specific and honorable profession. And it's if you need therapy, you go to a therapist. If you want spiritual teachings, you go to a spiritual teacher, and they're not the same thing. And I think some people get confused about that. But don't expect a teacher necessarily. It's always different to show a lot of interest in the nitty gritty of your daily life. That's not what they see as their role.
Okay. Robbie?
Yes.
We do have a question from Sue. She wants to know, are there any female lamas?
There are, yeah. I mean, it's not an official term. It's controversial in some circles, but I think the general feeling is now there are very qualified female lamas or female gurus. Again, it's as it's not an official title that's given out. There are many outstanding female teachers, and there are more coming along in the West in particular. The Tibetan system is somewhat rigid and hierarchical, but even that's changing. And His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, is very supportive of that. One word I didn't mention is Geshe. Okay, that is an academic degree. Okay, that you have to earn by completing the full course of monastic studies in the Tibetan University, and that is awarded in a ceremony, and that's like a specific title that, you know, it is recorded, and you can't just call yourself a Geshe. A Geshe is an academic title. Doesn't mean you're a great teacher necessarily. Okay, a Geshe is not necessarily a guru. A guru doesn't have to be a Geshe. Okay, Lama Yeshe, who founded the FPMT, was considered by many of the people in the monastery to be somewhat of a scallywag, and he never received a Geshe degree. So he was a guru and a lama, but not a Geshe. And there are many Geshes who lead a very academic type life and don't do a lot of teaching. So that's another term. Okay. Dun, 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 dun. Okay, talked about inspiration. That is really the core of this relationship, particularly in the sutra, when you're practicing the sutra teachings, the Lamrim teachings. The teacher is to, if you're not inspired by the teacher, that's probably, you know, you can learn from them, but it's probably not that big a deal, okay? If this is really a teacher for you, they're going to inspire you. You're going to want to become like them. It's going to motivate you to practice your meditation, okay? And this is where the term root guru comes from. This is the teacher who inspires us the most, who really motivates us to make progress on our spiritual path. And again, it's not an official relationship where you go up to someone and say, will you be my root guru? It's just something you acknowledge to yourself. Okay, this is my root guru. It's the use of the word root. When we say that the teacher is the root of the path, and I was reading one writer on this, he said, note that he doesn't say the teacher, the Buddha didn't say the teacher is the seed of the path, okay? A seed is something that everything grows from. The root is something that nourishes and nurtures, okay? So your spiritual progress doesn't grow from the teacher, but it's constantly nourished. That's where you receive your inspiration, your nourishment that pushes you on the spiritual path at various levels. And generally someone we acknowledge as our root guru is going to be someone that will take vows from at some point. And we talked about that in the first class, the different types of vows. There are the lay vows, the refuge vows. More than likely, the teacher you take from them will not turn out to be your root guru, but they may. Then there's the bodhisattva vows, which you can take many times. And if you've identified someone as your root guru, it'd be advantageous to take those vows from that person. And then there are various tantric vows. And again, if someone seems to be your root guru and they are offering tantric teachings, it would be beneficial to take tantric vows from that root guru, the one who nourishes you the most. And let's see, what else did I have here? If we don't seem to have a teacher or any teachers, according to the Buddha, that means we haven't created the causes to do so. Okay. to create the causes. We can do things like read, look at teachings online, go to a variety of teachings with different teachers, make our prayers to receive a teacher. These would all help create the causes to meet teachers. If you notice on the schedule, there's a prayer service going on Zoom tonight that Kadampa Center does regularly called Guru Puja, which is a puja means prayer service. And this is where this is a long text where we think about the benefits of having a teacher, the inspiration we get from our teacher, and it creates the causes to meet teachers and to have continued relationships with them. And you don't have to do, that's a fairly elaborate practice, but just meditating on the benefits of a teacher helps create the causes to meet teachers. When we talk about doing prayers, it's really, you know, in Buddhism, it's an atheistic religion. There's no God. So we're not praying to someone. What we're really doing is creating great aspirations or wishes in our own mind. Okay. Nothing happens without an aspiration in Buddhism. So when we do our prayers, we're aspiring to things. Okay. That's what the prayers are at the beginning of these sessions. But don't just sit back and think that teachers are going to fall into your lap or just float down from the sky. You have to create the causes, okay? And it doesn't mean that you have to come to Kadampa Center or anything like that, but that's a good way to become exposed to a lot of different teachers. And you can begin to start examining them and see, does this inspire me or not? So that's what I wanted to say about Guru Yoga. It can be practiced both for those of us who are on the sutra path, and then it enters into a whole nother level when we enter into the tantric path. Okay? But it is yoking ourselves to a teacher with positive qualities. Okay, and the most important of those positive qualities are compassion and an ethical lifestyle. Okay, but those are the most important things to look for. And then we want someone, of course, who knows more than we do. But that is who we would yoke ourselves to, who we would trust to that degree. And we say, you know, we want my actions of body, speech, and mind to become like your actions of body, speech, and mind. And we actually, there are actual visualizations, meditations where we may visualize the Buddha in front of us, and we visualize light coming from the forehead of the Buddha to our forehead, pure white light. That's saying my actions of body become like yours. We visualize white light coming from the Buddha's throat to our throat. My actions of speech become like yours, and we visualize white light coming from the Buddha's heart to our heart. My actions of mind become like yours. You ask a Tibetan where their mind is, and they say here. Okay, so that's where actions of mind occur. But that is a visualization that we do that expresses that sense of yoking ourselves to the teacher. Any more questions? So let's do one final meditation. Just sit quietly for a minute. Set your motivation. Just a moment of concentration on the breath. And now just bring to mind a teacher that you have had who inspired you. What about that relationship did you find inspiring? And how did it change you as a person? It doesn't have to be a Buddhist teacher. It can be anyone, but someone who really set that fire going in you so that you do your hard work under the influence of this inspiration became more the person you wanted to be. And it's sad when we think about this sort of relationship where we are inspired by a teacher, that we become aware of how kind that teacher was and what they did for us. The effort, the energy that they put into inspiring us. And when we realize that kindness, the natural response is to wish to repay it, to give something back to our teacher. And it's said that the greatest gift we can give to our teacher is to put their teachings into practice. Nothing makes a real teacher happier than that. And you can relax your concentration. So that is the end of our module. So thank you everyone for attending. Thank you, Linda, for all your work on managing this. I hope people found this beneficial. I just encourage people to expose yourself to lots of different teachers, both
thank
at Kadampa
so
Center and elsewhere. And please, check in with Kadampa Center and see what's going on. There's a lot going on, and I hope that there will be more in-person activities at the center soon, but the health and well-being of everyone, including our precious teachers, is our number one priority, so everything will be done with as much care as possible. If you would like to support the center financially, that is always tremendously appreciated. But just by showing up, that's the greatest thing you can do. Okay, so thank you, everyone.
Thank you
Stay
so
healthy.
Much, Robbie.
Yeah, great. Good seeing everybody.
Thank you,
yes,
Robbie.
So we do have a break next week,
yeah.
And then we start back up the first Monday of August.
Okay, great. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks so much, everybody.